This is Sermon Smith, a bi-weekly conversation about the craft of sermon preparation, and my name is John Chandler. Welcome back for another great interview. The guest today is Mark Halleck. Mark is a pastor in Inglewood, Colorado at Calvary Church, and has a great story about how they were a church that was a declining church. They brought him in and just has really rejuvenated the church. Talks a lot about his passion for preaching, and something unique to this interview that I really enjoyed was Mark talked about how he's really trying to raise up and to develop other preachers as they're looking to start other congregations around their city. So I think this is a unique spin that comes in this one. Before we move on to the interview, I want to let you know that the partner for this episode is Logos Bible Software. I am a big believer in Bible software. As you know, some of our guests use it, some of it haven't tried it, and I know that you might be the same. Maybe you use Bible software and you love it. Maybe you've kind of experimented with it, but if you're interested in getting in, if you go to logos.com/sermonsmith, you can get 15% off any base package. And if you go to that site and use a coupon code provided, a portion of your purchase will come back and help support the cost of putting the show together. Had a couple people actually email me or tweet me and say, hey, I'm looking to get Logos. Please let me know to make sure I do the right thing to make sure you get credit for it. So thanks to you for being conscientious about that, those of you who have reached out. Again, it's logos.com/sermonsmith. I believe the coupon code they have on there right now is sermonsmith6 because they're on Logos Part 6. I'm also starting a new campaign on Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon.com is basically, it's like how to be a patron of the arts. If you would like to support the show and you don't want to go out and spend, you know, a lot of money on a Bible software package, you can come alongside and say, I really believe in what Sermon Smith is doing. Maybe it's been helpful to you, and you can help support the cost of putting the show together, the time I put into it as well. So patreon.com/sermonsmith. And the way it works is you just pledge to give a certain amount for each episode that is produced. And right now it is biweekly. And right now it is twice a month. I'm still looking into potentially trying to do a third interview show every month, and then a fourth, more interactive style format show that I'll talk more about in the weeks to come. But some of that's just going to depend on if we can create the time for that. So as we grow a subscriber base on something like Patreon or through sponsorships, that will free me up a little bit more time to do some of those things. So thanks so much for your support. Thanks for telling others about the podcast. I just always enjoy hearing how people found it. So all that said, let's move on to Mark Halleck of Calvary Church in Inglewood, Colorado. Well, I'm here with Mark Halleck. Did I pronounce that the right way?
That's right, you did.
I never remember to ask until I'm actually recording. But I'm here with Mark Halleck, who is from Calvary Church, which is up in the greater Denver area, Inglewood, Littleton. How are you, Mark?
Good. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Mark, tell us about your church. Tell us about your context.
Yeah, so our church is located in Inglewood, which is kind of a southern suburb of the city of Denver, and is a pretty diverse community ethnically, economically. I had served as a youth pastor for a lot of years in a more of a suburban context, and about 5.5 years ago, the Lord just began to stir in my heart and my wife, and began to really just get excited about what God could do in the Inglewood area, which is an area in Denver that very few people are going to plant churches, to come alongside declining congregations. And we just felt like God was calling us to go and love people and be in the community and preach the word and just see what God could do to help revitalize this little dying Baptist church, which is Calvary Baptist Church at that time. And so that was 5.5 years ago. And we had no idea what we were doing, and we just trusted the Lord and went to Calvary, and there were about 30 sweet folks there who just loved Jesus and had been faithful for a long time but were tired, and they were actually on the verge of selling the building, and like in Denver and a lot of cities, there's just churches closing all the time and apartment complexes going up, and we just felt like, man, God is not done with this sweet little church. And so we went there, and by God's grace, it's been an adventure the last 5.5 years of just ordinary pastoring, man, just loving people, loving Jesus, trying to shepherd well. And by God's grace, he's brought a lot of growth and in a healthy way, I think, in the community. And now we planted our first church in 2013 in Littleton out of Calvary Inglewood. And then this year we're planting two more, one in Aurora and one in Lakewood. So we definitely have a heart for not only revitalization, but church planting. And it's just been a fun adventure. It's been really exciting.
Sounds like you're just trying to plant a circle around Denver.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Pretty much the way Denver is, and I think this is important to understand about Denver, is you kind of have the urban core, which used to be much more diverse. It's not as diverse anymore, and a lot of the Hispanic community specifically has sort of been pushed to the edges, what we call the donut, and then you've got the suburbs on the outer ring. And so we are real passionate about the donut and planting churches within that area. About 70% of Denver is that area, in desperate need of churches being revitalized, church planting. And so that's kind of our target, target group or area, if you will, from Calvary. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. We're excited about it.
And the church you're at, is it, or, you know, the church that you came to, was there expectation when you came that you were going to almost relaunch a new church out of that existing church? Or was it you just came as a pastor and then you brought with that kind of the new life for the church?
That's right. Yep, exactly. So you know, we talk a lot these days about replanting. I would say replanting versus revitalization. Replanting is a situation where you're going to a declining church. They know that they're going to die. And in a sense, they kind of sign everything over to this new group of people or this other church, and they're going to come in and sort of relaunch it as a new church. This was not that. This was revitalization, which I would say is going into an existing church and praying that the Lord does a work of transformation, utilizing the people who are there. And that's why I think revitalization takes a long time. What we've seen at Calvary is not normal. That's really God's grace, but you know, it really takes a shepherd's heart, a love for people, and visionary leadership to see this church begin to move outward on mission. So yeah, they didn't really know what they were in store for. And I didn't either. To be honest, at the time, my heart was just, I'd been in larger churches and really just desired to shepherd a smaller congregation. And so by God's grace, a lot of those same values, though, that we had when we were 30, we now have as a larger, little medium-sized church now.
And just for the sake of context and understanding, you talked about you started another church and you're starting others. Are those full-on independent churches? Are they sister churches? Are they like multi-site, or how's that all coming together?
Yeah. They actually are autonomous churches. So they're locally, what we'd call locally governed and locally supported within that congregation. At the same time, we want to kind of take the best of the multi-site model. We just theologically have convictions about, well, things like preaching and local elders. We want to contextualize ministry well, and we feel like here in Denver, especially with a multi-site model, that's just not what we feel called to. And so we want to raise up pastors and teams of people to be sent out and shepherd in local neighborhoods as autonomous churches. And yet we want to share where we can share. So sharing resources of various kinds, whether money, people, you name it, we want to share. And so that's why we call it the Calvary family. It's a family of churches that shares same name, same doctrinal commitments, same philosophical commitments, hopefully taking the best of what a lot of multi-site models have going, and yet maintaining that local eldership and preaching and caring for people in their particular context. So it's sort of a both and model, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and so you just led beautifully into my next question, as if you set it up for me. You talked about some of that comes out of your, you know, you have convictions about preaching. So tell us about what's the role of preaching in the life of Calvary Church?
Yeah. Well, preaching, we definitely have a very high value on the preached word in our church. The corporate worship gathering, we're different. And maybe you, I don't know if I said this already, but we are both part of the Southern Baptist Convention, and we're also part of the Acts 29 network.
Got it. Okay.
And so where we're a little unique as Baptists is we take the Lord's Supper every week in our church. When I came, we didn't. It was once a month, but we've moved to that. And so when we look at our worship gathering, there's definitely several very important components to that public worship gathering. But we would say that the preached word is very much central. It leads into the Lord's Supper. So word and sacrament both are very important to us at Calvary. And I wouldn't put those against each other, but I would say they complement one another. But preaching is definitely a huge value for us. In fact, one of our the things that we're really excited about and passionate about is raising up preachers who are planters, because we believe that the preached word is not only powerful in terms of feeding God's people, but also in leading mission. And so there's a leadership component that I think is really critical to what we're doing that comes from preaching the word. And I think really a shepherding component. I just don't know, and we don't talk a lot about this, I think, in preaching circles, but how to love people really well from the pulpit. And I really believe that that's a function of a biblical pastor elder, and it shouldn't be separate. And so we really place a high emphasis, not on preaching just for preaching's sake, but we play a high emphasis on the role of pastor elder, and preaching is a function of that. As we care about people, we love people, we encourage people, we know names, we know the kids, we know people. And so in that context, preaching is very important. And so we're very committed to that. And I think folks who come to Calvary, they know that. And we talk about that a lot, and we want to be faithful in our preaching of the word.
So it sounds like you would really want to – I'm pulling pieces together here from what you've said so far.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you a very explicit question that doesn't necessarily have a right answer. But
sure.
I mean, it sounds like you very strongly desire, between local pastors and then what you just described – you know, feel that the preacher should be in some level of relationship with people in the congregation and knowing them.
Right.
So do you have, I mean, do you have kind of an ideal size in mind for what each of your congregations would be?
Boy, that's a really good question, John.
I'm asking totally selfishly because we're trying to figure it out.
Well, and it's funny because I feel like I talk to guys a lot about that. And boy, I'll tell you, here's what I know. I think we've got to take the scripture, you know, because I've got friends who are in larger churches who I think would argue, hey, you know what, as you get bigger, it's just impossible for elders to really know their sheep that well. You know, so we've got to really delegate some of these responsibilities. And on one level, I understand that. I mean, we need to, you know, we believe in the priesthood of all believers, and we want to equip people well for care, whether it's in small groups or different settings. But I really do believe that biblically, it's just my own conviction, I can't get around the instruction that we see all through the Bible, really, of the role of a shepherd, knowing and feeding and protecting the sheep that God has entrusted you with. And so what we always say at Calvary is we're at our best when we're small. And so that's part of what drives us to plant churches is we feel like in Denver, in a city that is very secular and many non-Christians in the city, I praise God for the mega churches we have. But at the end of the day, the reality is the large majority of people in this city who don't know Christ are not going to mega churches. And so we want to go to them. And for us, that's targeting neighborhoods, more of a parish model of ministry that cares for people and preaches the word faithfully and shepherds folks really well. So an ideal size is really tough. I mean, you know, if I were to throw out a number, I personally like the size of about 300 people because I think that allows for to do some programming things that I think are helpful and beneficial in the church, but at the same time allows the elders to do the work of the elder, which is to know the sheep and care for the sheep and protect the sheep. So I just don't know how you can be a biblical elder pastor and not know the sheep under your care as a plurality of elders. And again, we're Baptists, and so that's our polity would lead us to a plurality of elders. But that's definitely a high value for us. And so in my sinfulness, and by God's grace, I think he continues to kind of kill this in me. But, you know, that desire to be a large church, I think what we've said is our convictions regarding the role of the pastor elder need to prioritize how big our churches are. And that's why we need to intentionally plant churches sacrificially. So I don't know if that helps answer that.
No, that's great. I figured from even everything you were saying, that was a question you were you thought through or were still wrestling through. So
well, that's good.
Thought I'd throw it in. Well, that being said, tell us about how you determine sermon series. You know, how far in advance do you do lectionary? Do you not do lectionary? And what's that process look like?
Yep. Well, basically up to this point, so we are we're pretty committed to preaching through books of the Bible expositionally, verse by verse. So we kind of take her slow at Calvary. So what we've tried to do is as elders, kind of, you know, again, be sensitive to where our people are, and what God's doing in our community of faith, and try to plan accordingly. Obviously, keep in step with the Spirit in those ways. But what we've kind of done generally up to this point is we've gone back and forth preaching through a book in the Old Testament, preaching through the book in the New Testament over my 5.5 years. Again, I've only been there 5.5 years, but we really want to help give our folks a steady diet of the Word. But we're very committed to expositional preaching. We've preached through in my time there, we've preached through James. We've preached through Jonah. We've preached through the Gospel of John, which was about 2 years, I think.
Yeah,
so, you know, and now we're on Luke, and we'll be there obviously a really long time. And I would say this though, we will intersperse, you know, 3 to 4 week series here and there, especially if there's a particular doctrine we want to highlight, or if there's just a, you know, a topic, or something that we need to address as a church. But for the most part, we kind of stick with a pretty steady diet of preaching through books of the Bible.
When you talk about taking little breaks, like what are examples of some things you've taken a break for?
Yeah. So, for instance, we've done, let's say we've done a small series on like marriage and family issues. We've done short series on spiritual warfare. We've done a short series on just mission. So every year we do a series just on our vision, mission, values, that kind of thing for 3 or 4 weeks. I would say in particular, so we're in Luke now and we're beginning to look at potentially doing a series on prayer that would go 3 or 4 weeks and really trying to drive down in specific areas that, again, we hope will serve our people and where they're at.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that being said, you know, one of the benefits I would imagine that comes with that, at least I know from my own experience and from others I've talked to, when you're just going exegetically through a book it allows you to have a pretty fine-tuned, I hope I'm not setting you up for failure with this statement I'm about to make. It allows you to have a somewhat fine-tuned rhythm of how you put your sermons together.
Yes.
Oh, that's maybe.
Very well said.
So that being said, tell us about that. What's the process you work through to put a sermon together? And, yeah. You know, attach a timeline to it.
No, that's great. And you're totally right. In years of youth ministry, I was pretty much a topical guy all the time. And again, I'm not an anti-topical guy, but I'm a very pro-exposition guy now. But man, I look now and I'm going, I don't know how I would do this any other way, just time-wise with other shepherding responsibilities. It helps me to live in the text and to be kind of breathing the air of the text, as I prepare week in and week out. Basically, I would say this, and I'm a fairly structured guy when it comes to my preparation for preaching each week. And, you know, I was years ago, I came across, I had a professor who introduced me to a guy named H. Griffith Thomas, and he's an old Puritan type. And he talked about the 5 steps of sermon preparation that Thomas would teach his students. And I'm sure you're familiar with it. I'm sure you've had guys on this program who've shared it. I know Alistair Begg has also shared it in one of his books. But basically the 5 steps that I use every week, and I'll just outline it and then I'll kind of give some commentary on it, is think yourself empty, read yourself full, write yourself clear, pray yourself hot, and let yourself go. So these are kind of 5.
I'll just interrupt and say you are the first person on the podcast who I think has talked about this. So
oh,
go
really?
For it. Yeah.
Oh, this is awesome. I'm so excited. I'm like, man, this is probably like every guest you have, but this has been so helpful for me in preaching. And it's something that I've shared with a lot of guys at our church, but let me kind of walk through what this looks like. So, starting with the first step, which is think yourself empty. So what I want to do is, and it usually begins Monday morning for me, is I want to spend time before I go to commentaries, before I go to other texts, I want to spend time with the Bible and the Lord and just get out my notepad. I'm kind of old school that way, and get my Bible open and maybe have a couple other translations there as well. But I want to just spend a chunk of time just thinking through the text and looking at the text and looking at the words. And basically, it's just kind of a free-for-all for me in this first phase of just writing down anything and everything that comes to my mind. If I see some kind of basic outline structure, if there's illustrations or word pictures that come to my mind, man, I just go nuts just trying to think myself empty and just whatever I've got and whatever God kind of gives me that time, I just want to write down. And so it's a pretty simple stage in the process, but I think it's really, really important. I know for me early on, I love to study. And so it was a great temptation to skip this stage altogether and just go to commentaries and be like, man, these guys are way smarter than me anyway. So what's the point in me kind of thinking, you know, I'll just kind of see what other guys have thought about it. And really felt convicted about that and had some mentors speak into that and say, no, you need time just with the Lord on Mondays. And so this has really become a fun part of the process for me, especially after a long Sunday and Monday, just trying to, you know, kind of take it easy, but get back into the rhythm of a new week and taking time just to write down whatever is going on, whatever I see in the text. And so I call that think yourself empty. And that leads to the second kind of stage for me, which is read yourself full. And this is where I go to commentaries. And so depending on the book I'm preaching, depending on really the passage I'm preaching, I may read anywhere from two commentaries to four or five commentaries. And again, I like this stage, so I enjoy studying.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure for a couple of reasons. One, that I'm not heretical and preaching something goofy that nobody else has thought about before. But I also want to, just be humble before the Lord and before others who, quite honestly, have way more experience and really sharp minds and have loved people well, and just to gain whatever insights into the text that I can get. And so I try to typically have at least one or two technical commentaries. And that's one of the ways that, you know, as a seminarian, and I was no language nerd or anything, but I do try to keep my Greek up, and a technical commentary I found helps me to do that. And then I also try to have one or two kind of more preaching commentaries, if you will, that are less technical, but helpful, I think, in helping me understand the text and how to communicate the text in a way that will connect with our people. So that's the read yourself full stage. And again, I think it all depends on the passage, how much time you take with that, but I do think it's important. That leads to the third stage, which is write yourself clear. So think yourself empty, read yourself full, and then write yourself clear.
You're restating your outline like a preacher here.
Yeah, that's right. I just want to be just real clear. I love clarity. This is like kryptonite for me, this stage. This is not fun for me. I'm an extrovert. I love people. I love to read. But manuscripting, and that's what this stage is a sheer discipline for me each and every week. And before I became a senior pastor, I was not very disciplined in this area. And what I found was I can get up and talk, but over time, what food am I giving the people? And what I found is if I am not doing the hard work of manuscripting each and every week, I'll say a lot of the same things. I'm not getting creative. It doesn't force me to think through sentences and how to say things in a more clear way, in a more powerful way. And so fortunately, I've had just some really good mentors who really emphasized manuscripting. And so that is what I do in this stage. So by the way, going back to your timeline question. So I would say read yourself full for me comes about Tuesday and Wednesday is when I'm studying in that time and jotting down notes and everything. Wednesday into Thursday, typically those 2 days is when I try to be writing my manuscript, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Partly is because I really want to spend time on Fridays with my wife and my kids and not just be totally drowned out. Plus, we have a Saturday night service, which is different than some churches. So that kind of has a different dynamic to it. But I want to write my manuscript Wednesday into Thursday. And a couple of things I just say, I guess, about this stage is, one, it is, I think it does help, especially for those listening who, you know, you can kind of get two extremes. You can get the guy who's really gifted as a communicator and can talk for 40 minutes and really do a good job. Where I would push in is, if you're preaching week in and week out, your people will begin to notice and wonder, you know, what kind of food am I getting here? You know, we're hearing a lot of the same things, and it's just easy. And that's true for all of us. I know it's true for me. So a manuscript in some ways protects the people from me, I would say. Hmm. And I think that's it's an important step. I would also say that after I write my manuscript and I've got it done, because some are like, well, do you preach from your manuscript directly? And I would say, yes, I do. But this is how I do it. After I print that baby off, which feels so good, I'm going to spend at least 3, maybe 4 hours ripping it to shreds with highlighters and pens. And guys make fun of me all the time at my church for this. But part of that is I don't want to read a lecture. I want to preach. And so what I've found is that step after I print that manuscript off, in some ways the work is just begun, but it changes because now I'm starting to eat this thing and memorize parts of it. I'm walking around through the house preaching to myself. It's just kind of a crazy picture. But I know that way when I get into the pulpit and I take my manuscript with me into the pulpit, I know where I want to read certain things that I feel need to be worded the way that I wrote them. And then there are other aspects of the sermon that I can move away from the pulpit and just swing hard for the fences. But I found that's a really important stage. And it takes a lot of work. And I think that takes the best of a manuscripting sermon. And at the same time, addresses those concerns that non-manuscript guys have of saying, well, hey, look, I mean, you're not looking at people. And I get all that. And so what I'm saying is I think it's a both and. And if it's going to be a both and, it's just a lot of work and it's a lot of time.
Yeah.
And so I practice. I mean, I still to this day run through my sermon at least 2 times before I get to the first service on Saturday night. So we have 1 service Saturday night and 2 services Sunday morning. And again, part of that is just my own. I want to be ready. I like to be prepared. But I also want to, I want to feel free in the pulpit, if that makes sense. I want to be able to be sensitive to the Spirit's leading. I want to be present with people in the congregation. I want to be sensitive to what God's doing with the people that I'm preaching to, who are in that room. And every service is different. And so what I found, again, is that just takes a lot of preparation.
Even having a manuscript, knowing between – I mean, I first church I worked at had a Saturday night service too. So even knowing you've got it all manuscripted out, how much do you find your sermon varies between the first service Saturday and the last service Sunday?
You know, it's funny. Here's what I would say. I would say the longer I preach, I mean, the more I preach – the more it is different. And I think in some ways, I think I've just become more comfortable over time. I mean, and you know this, but man, preaching just takes a ton of reps. I mean, and that's really what it is. And so I found that like Saturday night, there are going to be things that I hit on because I know those people and it's a different group of people than Sunday morning at 9. But I do try to allow for about a 10-minute cushion of impromptu rants. So I want to make sure that the core of the message is going to be the same that I've worked through, I've prayed through, but I want to allow room to be able to be sensitive to what God's doing, if that makes sense. So sure. They are different. I mean, there's no doubt. If you were to listen to all three, you'd be like, well, man, you didn't even mention that. And most of the time, I wasn't planning on mentioning anything. You know, those are like impromptu things that just come to me while I'm preaching that I want to speak into the sermon for that particular service. So that leads us then to the fourth stage of this process, which is pray yourself hot. So again, let me review. So we got think yourself empty, read yourself full, write yourself clear, and then pray yourself hot. What I want to do is I go between – I've written the sermon. I've begun to, you know, eat it up. I'm starting to highlight and cut stuff out and I'm beginning to practice this. Man, I just want to saturate this time in prayer. And for me, what that means is, You know, as I'm preaching, I'm praying, and as I'm preparing, I'm praying, and I just want to beg God. I really do every week. God, would you use this? Because, man, there's times I put in all this time, and I'm looking at the sermon going, Lord, this is terrible. I don't know if there's anything in this. I don't even know. I think maybe I've blown it. But I know, Lord, that you're God, and this is your word, and you're going to use it to change people and encourage people. And so I just never want to presume, you know, and just trust in my own work and what I've done, my own preparation. But I beg the Lord and his Holy Spirit to move in power. You know, every week, by God's grace, we see people coming who don't know Christ. And I pray the Lord would save them. I pray God would open their eyes to the gospel. And I pray for those who are discouraged that the Lord would move in power in their lives. And so I'm just convicted that, you know, in our preaching preparation, prayer is so important. And if nothing else, it's just my heart before the Lord and saying, God, this is yours. I'm nothing without you. I want to honor you. And I pray you just change people's lives. And so that would be kind of that fourth component. And that leads right up to when I step inside the pulpit. And that's kind of the fifth stage, which is let yourself go. Let yourself go. So when I say let yourself go, I just mean let yourself go. It's time. You've done the work. You've prayed. You've manuscripted. You've practiced. And now it's just time to say, God, this is yours. This is your sermon. These are your people. And just have fun. You know, get in the pulpit. You know, I always think of the Puritan Richard Baxter, who said, you know, preach as a dying man to dying men. And I think there's an urgency there to just say, man, if this is the last sermon I ever preach, and I always think about this, because it could be. I mean, the Lord could take me home this week. I don't know. But boy, how would I preach this sermon if this was the last sermon I'd ever preach? And I just want to give it my all for the glory of God and for the good of his people and have fun while we do it. So those are kind of the my main five steps of preparation. I'll just review it again because a preacher would do that. Think yourself, read yourself full, write yourself clear, pray yourself hot, and let yourself go. So that's kind of it.
So you were going well. So I didn't want to interrupt you along the way, but I jotted down. I know I did once or twice, but I jotted down a couple questions to come
back
to.
Awesome. Please do. Please do.
First of all, I mean, I really appreciate your heart for prayer. I think we often assume that, but we shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And it's a good reminder. So thanks for mentioning that. You talked about, you know, reading yourself full and going into commentaries and stuff like that. Are you a Bible software guy who, you know, tucks them all around in an iPad under your arm everywhere you go? Or do you have bookshelves full of commentaries?
Yeah, I wish I were smart enough with technology. I'm kind of old school, so I've got stacks of commentaries that I read through. And plus, I just love books, man. I just love having pages to feel. And so I usually have a stack of commentaries that I'm sort of carrying with me in my car all the time throughout the week.
Yeah. And what are some of your favorites there? What are some of your go-to series?
Man, well, that's great. There's so many. I think it really depends on the particular book, for one thing.
Yeah.
I really like it's a newer series, the Reformed Expository Commentary Series. In fact, as I'm preaching through Luke right now, Phil Ryken has a two-volume in that. Daryl Bach. So right now, again, I'm in Luke, so I'm going to name a bunch of the ones I'm using now. But
yeah.
Bach's Luke commentary is sort of classic. It's massive. And that's my primary technical commentary that I'm using in this series. I love James Montgomery Boyce is a preaching commentary. Just feel again, he handles the text really well, but is really pastoral. Kent Hughes in the preaching, I think it's Preaching the Word commentary series, I've found to be very helpful. Those would just be some that right now, actually this week, that I've been into. But man, we're so blessed in this day and age. The resources we have is just unbelievable.
And overwhelming, but yes.
Incredibly overwhelming. So you kind of have to pick and choose and then just go with it, you know.
And then as you do the when you get to that manuscript, you know, I can certainly understand. I resonate with you in terms of I could just keep reading and studying and jotting down notes. But
yep.
I have so much, and the actual word for it is resistance, you know.
Yep.
If you've ever read The War of Art, that's what he talks about in there. Yes. But just the, I don't want to do to this part because I still want to gather more information.
That's right, totally.
But all that said, you know, you said it takes a chunk of Wednesday and Thursday. How long is that manuscript when you're done with it.
Yeah, so I try to keep it at 8 full pages or less. That doesn't always happen. I preach for about 45 minutes roughly every sermon. So it's about 5 minutes per page on average, and I try to go about 8 pages.
Single spaced?
Yeah. Now here's the thing. My manuscript, I wish I could show you, but I do manuscript every word, but I try to set it up in more of an outline kind of format. So, but it is, that would be single space though. Yeah. 12 font. Single spaced.
If,
yep.
If you'd be willing to share, I'd be glad to post an example of one of your outlines on the website.
Awesome. Sounds great.
Okay.
So that's typically I shoot for eight pages. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more. But if I know if I go 10 pages, my 10-minute ramp cushion has just been eliminated. So, but I shoot for about 8 pages.
And do you, this took us very clearly through how you put it all together. I'm curious, as you start to manuscript, mm-hmm. You mentioned early on, like even on Monday, trying to see if a natural outline emerges. But do you have a particular structure you start to try to work yourself into when you're manuscripting, or do you just see what develops?
Honestly, I kind of just see what develops. I feel like that's probably where I'm not overly anal in that. I mean, I can tell you this. There are times where my outline changes 3 or 4 or 5 times as I'm writing the manuscript. So, I mean, this might be a portion. I want to hit this point. I know some stuff. I don't know about this first movement. There's times where honestly, where my outline, at least my major headings and subheadings, I don't have those completely worded just how I want them until right before I print out the sermon. So it kind of depends on the week for me in that regard.
Yeah. And then beyond that, outside of like any given sermon, I assume like most preachers, you're reading a lot all the time, not necessarily even things that you're about to preach on.
Yep.
Do you have any kind of systems that you try to follow for capturing something that you think, oh man, when I get to Luke chapter 22, this will be really good? Or,
you know what? It's so funny. I feel like I've tried so many different methods and none of them really work for me. I mean, I've tried, I have a file on my phone of like word pictures, illustrations or whatever. And sometimes I'll do that. I've just found from the way my mind works, for good or bad, that's just how it is. It's hard for me to plan too far in advance. So I'm usually at best 2 or 3 weeks I'm thinking ahead. But for the most part, I'm like, man, I get done with one sermon and I put that baby to bed and I'm on to the next one. And for that week, I'm probably just aware and thinking through the week of, word pictures or illustrations. And then I just keep my document. So my manuscript documents just open on my computer all week long. So I'll usually have a little section at the bottom of just random, what I call scraps. Here, maybe throw this on verse 3. This could be a helpful insight. This could, whatever. And then I actually collect those scraps. So like after I do a series, I've got probably 100 pages of just scraps, of different word pictures and things like that. But, I'm probably not the one to ask that has a really good system for that, but just trying to be open to, as I go.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've tried to move us through, cause I wanted to set aside a little bit of time to have another conversation with you that you cued on or touched on a couple times. And then I had this, I can't remember, I feel like it was somebody who works with you who first suggested that I interview you. And I think that he said, I think he said that you just really like to help raise up and develop others, which you're obviously mm-hmm. doing. So I'd love to hear from you a little bit about what your process looks like as you're intentionally trying to raise up others to do what you're doing, not just other pastors, but other people who will be preaching in local congregations.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, this is, by God's grace, this is actually what I'm finishing up my doctoral work at Westminster in Philadelphia. And this was my whole project was on this, on basically what we've called the Spurgeon League. I'm a big Charles Spurgeon fan. And, basically it just felt like as we're planting churches, as we're raising up leaders to go out and help revitalize congregations in our city and in other places, in the country as well, I had never seen a church do a really good job of developing preachers, and especially I would say elders as preachers, and even younger individuals who need experience for a lot of different reasons. You know, I mean, you're not going to just throw anybody up in the pulpit, and I get that. But my question was, well, how are we developing these future preachers and pastors? And so we just began kind of with this vision of, hey, what would happen if, once a month we got together for a couple hours, did some basic instruction on what preaching is, you know, assign a few books, give some assignments and spend a few months just learning about preaching. And then we just did it. And we had, you know, guys preach a 20-minute sermon, and we get together and just let them get in the pulpit in the sanctuary, and we bring some folks around and just encourage the heck out of them, because that can be such a scary experience. And I know at seminary a lot of times I feel they're doing the best they can, but it's not the best environment to encourage young preachers. And so we started doing that, and boy, it just kind of took off. And we've sort of formalized it now, and we've made it part of our intern program and our church planning apprentice program, which we have several of those guys in our church, and basically have prioritized this aspect of investing in their learning and their practice of preaching in community. And that's a big part of it, is being in community with one another, sharing thoughts, giving encouragement, brainstorming. One of my hopes is I want preaching to be a fun experience. And for a lot of individuals, I think it's really scary. They've been criticized. I mean, the bottom line is, man, we're all growing and we have a long way to go. And so that's really what at Calvary, we've tried to create an environment for young preachers to be trained up and to get experience preaching. One of the cool things about in our denomination here is we have several declining churches in this area who need pulpit supply, whether it's a rural church out in just east of Denver or up in the mountains or wherever. And our church has sort of become a go-to church for pulpit supply. And so it's been a lot of fun as these individuals are learning about preaching at Calvary to get opportunities to go preach at a small little country church and then come back and talk about their experience with the group or whatever. In fact, this Thursday, we've got three of our interns will be preaching for the first time to our group as part of the Spurgeon League. And, it's just really cool to walk through the process of preparation and encouraging them in that. But what I'd say is if a church is going to be serious about raising up preachers, you have to be really intentional about it. It doesn't just happen. And I think it has to be a passion of the lead pastor in most churches. It's got to be a priority. And I think it takes humility. I think you've got to say, you know what, this isn't my pulpit. This is the Lord Jesus's pulpit. And we want to raise up folks to preach the word faithfully to his people.
Yeah. I love your heart for that. I mean, I do feel like I'm actually working on we're part of the V3 movement, which is church planning connected with the Virginia Baptists. And so I'm working on a blog post right now for their website, which is how we raise up other preachers. Cause I really, you know, we also desire to have, you know, be starting multiple congregations in the same city. And I feel like the shortage is not going to be people, and it's not going to be places to meet or any of that. It's going to be people who can preach. And so we've got to find opportunities. So that's great. Thank you. Well, all that said, are there alongside all the rest of that, we'll start wrapping up here, but are there other books that have been helpful for forming you as a preacher that you'd love to pass along or share, or that you just think have been helpful overall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say for me personally, boy, there are a few books that really stand out. One is that I recommend all the time is D. Martin Lloyd-Jones, Preaching and Preachers. Mm-hmm. And what I love about that book and what really struck me when I read that book is I think, you know, I haven't read a book that gets to the heart of why preaching matters and what preaching really is, not the X's and O's and the nuts and bolts of preaching, but what it is and how the Holy Spirit uses preaching. I've never read a book quite like that. And it keeps, I know when I go back to that over and over again, it keeps me fresh. It keeps me passionate about what we're doing, that God uses preaching. So that's a book that I would say is really important for any preacher to read. I would say other books that have been really formative for me. One is, I believe it's John Piper's book. I think it's called Preaching and the Supremacy of God, or The Supremacy of God and Preaching. And the thing that really struck me about that book was Piper defines preaching as expository exaltation. And the way that I'm wired, man, that just so resonated with me, in the sense of preaching is exposition. We want to handle the text well. We want to handle it accurately. We want to teach it well. But there's more going on in preaching than just, sharing information. But there's worship going on. And that word exaltation, that as we preach, we worship. And the people encounter in our preaching the living God in a powerful way, in a way that causes them to worship and to look up. And so for me, that's a book that was really formative, really just that concept of preaching as worship. I would say, man, there's so many books. This is always a tough yeah, yeah. An answer. I would say a book like, for like a beginning preacher, not just a beginning preacher, I'd say for any of us, Brian Chappell's book on Christ-centered preaching was very helpful, alongside, of course, the classic Haddon Robinson's Biblical Preaching. What I love about Chappell, and I have more reformed leanings theologically, but I love the Christ-centeredness of his approach to preaching and preaching Christ from all of the Bible. And that was just really helpful for me, having not grown up in that tradition and learning to preach the gospel faithfully and point people to Jesus from all texts of the Bible. So that's been really helpful. Yeah, I could go on and on. I don't know if that's
great.
Okay.
Yeah, no. No, because I find that two things happen when I ask that question is, there's a few preaching and preachers is a great example that have just been mentioned multiple times. So we can kind of see which cream is rising to the top, because I kind of keep track on the website of what everybody's mentioned. But I also find that there's some, for some undiscovered nuggets that, people mm-hmm. hadn't even read before that maybe they'll find out of that. So, and I know that's I've picked awesome. Up a couple that I've read. So
That's great.
Mark, thanks so much. If I were to say, what's one thing about preaching that I haven't even asked you about that you would want to toss into this conversation? Is there anything you would want to add?
I would just add that, preaching matters. I would just say that I think in a day and age where perhaps preaching is not taking the central role that maybe it has, especially as Protestants in the history of the church, an authoritative role of preaching the word to God's people, I would just say, man, we can't give up on this. This is God's method, I really believe, for stirring the hearts of his people. It's not the only method of sanctification, but it's hugely important. And I would say it deserves for pastors to work hard at this. And it is hard work. This is not easy. It's strenuous, but man, it is so worth it. God is glorified and people are transformed. And so for anybody listening who is maybe discouraged, I would just want to encourage them and say, man, keep at it. Keep at it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you tossing that on there at the end. Well, if somebody wants to keep up with, I already mentioned the church's website is thecalvary.org, but do you tweet? Do you have a blog that if somebody wants to hear more about what you're up to?
Yeah, it's so funny. I'm actually getting ready to start a website, but I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and my email, my personal email would just be mark@thecalvary.org. And so I would say, man, any way I could especially encourage guys and gals or whatever, just please let me know.
Yeah. Well, Mark, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure to have you. It's always good. We didn't mention this in the actual recorded conversation, but I'm always happy to talk to another Broncos fan.
Awesome.
I just have to toss it in every five or six interviews.
So that's awesome, man. Hey, John, thank you so much, brother.
Yeah, blessings.